At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
What's up, combat crew? This is Matt from the Mortal Kombat Podcast. Thanks for joining Podcast Father on his journey, sharing the great things all sorts of creators are up to. He's the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the Podcast Father.
It's Indie Podcaster time. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. Tim McCarthy is with me for another intro here. How's it going, Tim? Is it hot in Boston?
Oh, it's wicked hot in here, dude. You know me, if anyone ever watches my episodes on YouTube, I record in a cat closet, which is aka my studio, and I am sweating. But it's good. I'm glad to be here.
It is quite the studio, too, this closet. It's got all sorts of decor in it.
Yeah, you got your wrestling action figures. I put up stickers from all the podcasters. So if you're a podcaster, want to send me your sticker, I will gladly throw it up in the closet.
Well, can't pass that offer.
No, right? Free advertisement.
Free advertising, absolutely. And check out his podcast, 2010 Minutes. He has a great spin on mental health. I love the podcast and recommend it. It's even got a cute little app.
Yeah, I got a cute little app with my cute little face on it. You can download for free with your Android or iPhone devices. Just type in 2010 Minutes. You'll find it. I do like a motivational quote. You can listen right on my app. I get discounts to my merch. It's just another app that you can have on your phone that builds up space. And then your phone will be like, hey, you need to disable some space. And then you delete my app. So just use it for a little time. It's cool.
He's got a pod with a bod. Anyway, today I'm going to share my interview with Alex Rudin. She's an artist, illustrator. And Tim, she's really big and involved in, you know, the social injustice issues that we see today in our country. She takes a big initiative and integrates that in her art.
I like it. I'm always envious of people that are great artists because I can't even draw a line with a straight. I can't even draw a straight line with a ruler.
Yeah, the worst grade I had in high school was in drawing. That's a fact.
It's like I feel like you're a genius, which she probably is. Anyone that can, I don't have that artistic ability to, even back in the day, like people that, like Michelangelo and stuff, I'm like, I don't know, like, how did they do that? Like, they didn't have any tracing mechanisms. They just did that.
Tim Michelangelo is what I'm going to say. Anyway, one other thing we talk about during this interview is how important it is if you do have a platform, kind of like you and I do, Tim, to share and discuss the things that you're passionate about.
Oh, 100%. People can read right through that if you don't. Like, obviously, I'm passionate about mental health, especially with my dark sense of humor, because that's how I present it. But yeah, you have to stay true to yourself in those types of moments when you're putting yourself out there. People aren't dumb. People are, like, I'm dumb, but I'm not that dumb. I'll read right through you.
Tim is a world-class reader.
That is 100% false, but yes.
Do I hear T.I. music playing in the background? No.
Bring them out.
Bring them out. Line them up. Okay, so let's dive into this interview. You guys will enjoy this one. It is good. But before we get into that, let me take care of some stuff I got to do. I call it business.
Do that business.
Jeff here. I want to talk about a few things that keep this podcast going. If you like the work that I'm doing, I encourage you to share it with a friend. That really is the best way to spread the word about Indie Podcaster. I would love it if you would go to your favorite podcast listening platform, may it be a Apple or Good Pods, and leave me a rating. Throw me some stars if you would like. All that word of mouth and sharing and reviews of this podcast does help. This podcast and myself are proud member of Quite the Thing Media. Quite the Thing Media, podcasts that speak to you. Go check out all the great independent creators from around the world. It is a community-based podcast network, quitethethingmedia.com. If you want to check out my page, it's quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather. You can request a review from me on site or submit a form to participate on this very podcast. PodPage is a proud sponsor of this podcast. PodPage is an amazing resource to build your podcast website. You want them big search engine hits. You want to be out there. You want to leave your mark in the digital world. And this website makes it extremely easy to do that. You can set up your podcast website in just a few minutes. Make sure you check it out, podpage.com. That's enough of all that. Let's jump into this awesome interview. Joining me today is Alex Rudin. artist and illustrator. I always like doing these kind of interviews because it's a little bit different than just talking to a podcaster, if that makes sense. But thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
So I'm going to give you a few minutes just to tell us about yourself and what it all is you're involved in.
Sure. So as you said, I'm an artist and illustrator. I make work that deals with social justice movements, progressive politics, and specifically human rights organizations as well. So what I do is I make work about, you know, certain issues that are happening in our country and specifically this past year. And I partner with organizations, you know, that are either human rights organizations or nonprofits. And I work to make artwork that focuses on the messages that they, you know, the platforms that they have and prescribe for their issues. And, you know, we work together to make work that has synergy within their platform, which is really amazing.
I did I tried to do a little bit of research before the interview, right? Like a good interviewer would do. And I did see a lot of these social justice things that you're talking about. But before we get really into that, so take us back to the beginning and how it all began. Did you go to school for this? I assume you're interested in art at a really young age, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So I've always been super inclined toward the arts in general. You know, I was really interested in music when I was younger, but I also come from a very, very creative family, specifically within fine arts. My grandfather was an illustrator. My mom is an incredible artist. My uncle is an incredible artist in his own right. You know, he makes films, and my dad is like an amazing builder. He has such a visionary mind. So it's kind of intrinsic to who I am. But that being said, you know, I always like fostered my creativity when I was younger and was very lucky to have a family that did the same thing and helped me grow and put me in classes that further developed my creative spirit and passions. When you're young, you know, you do school art, you know, but I did IB, International Baccalaureate Art, as my major in high school. So I got to focus very intensely for 2 years on visual arts and fine arts at the end of high school, which was amazing and kind of led me into going to Parsons, which is where I went to school for illustration. And, you know, I focused in school on fine arts and illustration. I've always kind of been somebody that oscillated, kind of, you know, blurred the lines between the two. And then I graduated with an illustration degree and a minor in fine arts and kind of entered into the fine art world in more of that, you know, white space, you know, gallery deal that we all have. And kind of, you know, was in that world for a couple of years, had a few, you know, a few shows in the city, in Brooklyn, in Philly, the Hamptons, which was amazing, but I kind of didn't feel a click, really. I kind of felt like I was bashing my head against a wall trying to break into this world that, you know, was kind of about like hierarchy and power and money. And it didn't really fit with what I believed my purpose in the arts was. So I took a little bit of time and started to teach myself how to silkscreen, and throwing myself into a new medium completely really opened up my mind in terms of like the applications of art. And I founded my company, Rudin Studios, in 2019 while I was printing in the shop and learning Vera Eglamuse, which is gilding on glass. So I was kind of going down the road of small business, making products, and then COVID hit and I left the city and went about 45 minutes away and kind of was racking my brain, like what to do. You know, how am I going to continue my practice? How am I going to shift my business focus to something sustainable in this type of, you know, social climate? And I was really, you know, basically awestruck by the news, and I couldn't really detach myself from it. And I felt like I needed to do something to help people who were in need when COVID first hit. And so I made a series of paintings to auction off for homeless and trafficked youth in New York City, and made a couple $1,000 doing that and donated 100% of the proceeds there. And then kind of immediately after that, the murders of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor happened. And I followed suit and did something very similar, made a poster for Black Lives Matter and donated 100% of the proceeds to Black Lives Matter organizations. And then the election really started to ramp up and I found myself making work about the election, and some pieces that I had made there went, as I call, soft viral. And I kind of have been just following, going with the flow ever since in regards to, you know, my applications of work towards political spaces and the social justice movements, and have really found myself in a place that I find super fulfilling and makes me, you know, proud of the work that I'm doing and that it has an impact on the world outside of the art community, which I think is something that's really something so powerful about art, you know, that idea of aesthetic force, that you can change someone or shift someone's critical awareness around a certain issue through a piece of artwork, you know, whether it's painting or music or poetry, like Amanda Gorman, you know, at the inauguration. So yeah, that's like a little rundown of my history with art, but you know, that's kind of where I find myself now. Yeah.
Amazing. That's better than the movie, The Rundown. And I like that movie with The Rock in it. No, but seriously, Alex, that's awesome. And when, I'm going to say, your team reached out to me about doing this, they shared some artwork with me, and just me being assuming, not trying to assume, but I got a lot of gatherings from your heritage from that.
Okay. I'm interested to hear what it was, because I'm not entirely sure what my team showed you. So I'd love to hear. Yeah.
It was some artwork alluding to the Jewish community.
Okay. Yes.
Heritage connections. What do you have? What all do you have going on? Because that's the first thing that stood out to me.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I love that you responded to that artwork. Yeah. So I am, you know, a Jewish American, very proud Jewish American. And I felt that this year in particular was, quite honestly, the first year I felt fear being Jewish American. And I also live in New York City. So there, you know, our community is very strong here. There's a lot of us, you know, in comparison to other parts of the country. So I grew up in a very progressive town and family, and never really came across any type of anti-Semitism before, personally. And I felt like this year, anti-Semitism kind of stepped back into the, or out of the shadows and back into the light, really. And I felt that I had an obligation to make work about uprise of anti-Semitic trends in the U.S. And it really was kicked off by the January 6th insurrection and seeing those shirts that people were wearing. And I was really taken aback by them and felt compelled to address it. I feel also as an ally for the Black Lives Matter movement and other, you know, oppressed people, that I am privileged in the fact that I can hide my identity, because, you know, walking down the street, someone might not say, oh, that person is Jewish. You know, you don't really have any idea. People can stereotype if they like, but generally people have no idea. And I felt that because I have that privilege, I have a responsibility to not hide, to, you know, stand up and say, this is who I am, and I'm going to talk about these issues, because I talk about these issues for other groups. So to do it for my own people is like of the utmost importance.
You're involved in a lot of amazing things. So honestly speaking, do you think the first time that this came to notion to you, the first time you really realized it, was on January 6th? Or from your heritage, have you heard so many other stories like we all have?
Yes, of course. I mean, my entire life I've been incredibly aware of the Holocaust and, you know, Jewish history in particular. You know, I went to Hebrew school twice a week, three times a week, actually, for about 11 years. You know, our group of friends, like family friends, were all Jewish. I was very involved in the Jewish community. You know, I was in a Jewish youth group after I was bat mitzvahed. And I think that because it is, I think the Jewish community can be so insular that we don't actually, or I didn't really come across hatred. I also went to a Quaker school growing up, which is like, you know, Quakers, I believe in simplicity and equality and peace, you know, nonviolence. So I was in a community that was very loving and open as well. So I didn't really experience any type of anti-Semitism there, per se. I mean, I remember there being like a swastika being spray painted on like a part of the school or something. But like, that was really the extent of it. But I would say, yeah, I mean, culturally, growing up in a Jewish community, I was incredibly aware of the history of the Jewish people and the oppression that we have faced and you know, the genocide of the Holocaust. And I have always been very interested in history and have educated myself around Jewish history pretty intensely since around middle school. And I really also made an effort in my travels to go to concentration camps and visit the actual places that they these atrocities occurred, and really kind of intertwine that with my identity. You know, I being Jewish is a really large part of who I am and my identity, and it's only strengthened by the history of our people. And I think that this year kind of, I might say, opened my eyes a little bit to the fact that, like, okay, no, anti-Semitism is not gone. You've just kind of lived in a bubble.
Yeah.
So it's important to address these things because I have a platform that, you know, encompasses people from all over the country or all over the world. And it's important for me to talk about these issues, even though they are uncomfortable, and they are always inevitably met with like hatred and anti-Semitism back at me, which was something I wasn't necessarily prepared for, and kind of opening myself up to that type of hatred. But someone's got to do it. And I'm strong, and I believe that the work speaks for itself. So yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, everything that's been going on in the Middle East, as well as amped up anti-Semitic sentiment, misplaced anti-Semitic sentiment, you know, in New York specifically and across this country and the world. And I felt compelled to make work about that as well. You know, that idea that like, we're not going to hide in the shadows anymore. You know, we're here, but we need support, because everybody is supporting other marginalized groups. So let's support the Jewish community as well.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, this isn't necessarily like I would say a political podcast by any means, but right, this issue to me is much more than political. You know, it's just down to earth for me. You're right. It's not always the most comfortable conversation to have, but I do think it's important. You know, I'm a white guy. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know how Black people feel. I'm not even going to pretend like that. But what I do think is important, and is I can't tell them how to react to something. That's not right. It's really a time where you need to just listen to all the different voices and take it all in and use a platform if you can and have that available to make a difference. Because I have not walked in everybody's shoes. I can't even begin to act like that. But what we can do, you know, you and I, when we have a platform like this, we can talk about these important things and try to make a difference, because that is important.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that that's something I try and do on my platform is educate. And I think that really all of this, all intolerance and hatred comes from fear, and fear comes from lack of education, lack of understanding around certain cultures or certain peoples. And I think that once we, you know, kind of boil down our differences and realize that, you know, we're all human. We are all people who want the same things, which is, you know, equality and rights for all and acceptance. And it doesn't matter what group you belong to. It's that we are all striving for this one thing. And I think that a theme that I try to pull throughout my artwork is the idea of empathy, and that concept of when you have empathy for people, then you can truly, you know, you just said it, you know, you haven't walked in the shoes of other people, but when you have empathy, you can imagine and you can try and understand where people are coming from. And I'd like to hope that at some point, because we develop this empathetic sense of ourselves, that instead of like pointing at our neighbor because they're different, that we'll reach out our hand and help them, because we're not that different. You know, we really are all just the same.
No, I agree. And this country definitely has a problem. I mean, we know that much, but people of privilege like myself, I'm not denying that by any means, but you need to listen to your Black brothers and sisters and people of minority. And that's part of the process of coming together, like you're alluding to, in my opinion. I could go off on a soapbox all day, but I think you're absolutely 100% correct.
Yeah. And I think that even people who, you know, have privilege like you and I, that, you know, I'm not identifiably Jewish, you know, I'm a white girl. And I think that even if you are in a place of privilege in that sense, I kind of mentioned it earlier that, like, because I'm not identifiably Jewish or something else, that I have a responsibility towards the people who are oppressed because they are identifiable. Because if I, as a Jewish woman, you know, hide because I don't want people to see who I am, then it invalidates all of the other work that I do for, as an ally. Do you know, you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yep. I think we're, saying the exact same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm proud to announce that the podcast father, myself, Jeff, and Podpage are teaming up for this sponsorship. Podpage is great, guys. Like I was telling you earlier, it is so critical to have an actual podcast website. I know the link trees are used a lot, but you need an actual website. You need something that's going to show up in Google. You need something that's going to show some hits, a trail that will lead to your podcast. And there's not a better way to do it than Podpage. You can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a listener-friendly podcast site from your RSS feed. Customize the design to create a professional look you'll be proud of in just a few clicks. There is no coding or technical knowledge necessary. There's a free trial to give this a shot, and there's different packages ranging from free to all the goods and gadgets, but still at affordable prices. Podpage is big supporters of indie podcasts, so make sure you support them also. Go on podpage.com and get your podcast website set up. With that being said, we will roll into this segment sponsored by Podpage, where we will play a trailer from a different indie podcast every episode. I hope you enjoy it and give them a listen after you're done listening to my show. Then afterwards, we'll jump back into the interview.
Hi, I'm Ezra Graham, host of the News Nerds podcast. Every Wednesday, a new episode is released, exploring some of the biggest topics out there with some of the most intelligent individuals in the world. We have spoken with authors, activists, winners of prestigious prizes like the Pulitzer and Peabody Awards, and even more individuals based from the U.S. to Australia. Also on the podcast is a dive into the news, from the latest updates on science to the biggest news story of the week. Listen on demand to over 50 published episodes wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, newsnerdspodcast.com.
Alex, how hard is it when you're so emotionally invested into this art from, you know, from a creative standpoint? How hard is it to, I don't want to say turn it off because it's never really going to go away, but is it hard to get it off your mind? Because I assume it could consume a lot of you if you weren't careful. And it would almost be like you were going to not be accomplishing as much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that I feel a great responsibility, which can sometimes be stressful or make me feel like there's pressure. I think that I also feel a responsibility to address almost everything I possibly can address, which for a creator is probably not the most fruitful thing. But I never want people to feel like I'm not talking to them or that I'm not focusing on their issues because I'm focusing on my own. But I think that I'm lucky because I find making the work so therapeutic for me that the actual creation of the work calms me down. So whenever I'm revved up or feel like I'm not making peace about this, I'm not doing enough about that, that when I actually do come up with a strategy that want, because everything really is about strategy with me. And, you know, when I come up with a strategy about a certain issue or topic and I boil it down to this idea or this concept that I need to address, one thing that I almost always try to achieve in my work is to make a piece come from power and not negativity or sadness. And I think that that is something that protects me because I'm not making like depressing pieces. I think that the work that I make that addresses social justice issues empowers the people that need to be empowered. And that's a big focus that I have. So not adding to the despair if you will. When I make the work, not only does it make me feel good because I'm making work and that's what allows me to breathe and live a happy life, but it also provides inspiration and power for people who are looking for it rather than compiling sadness. So I would say it really is a balance. It's hard to address everything I want to address, and sometimes I can't, and that definitely stresses me out sometimes, but I know that what I'm working on is important and I will get to the things that are important, but I'm only one person and I can only make so much work, and I kind of have to digest that idea, like radical acceptance, that like it is what it is and that's what it's going to be. So I try not to burn myself out or get too involved in the work that I make. You know, sometimes I can separate and be much more formulaic after I come up with the concept, and it's more of like a technical thing. So, you know, I have my own, you know, artist's way of separating from the work and really looking at it as work rather than this is every piece is my soul, which it is, you know, but I don't have that attachment to it necessarily, which I think allows me to not become consumed by the work.
Yeah, no, makes sense. That's something that's definitely important. It probably takes a little while to realize how important that is too. Kind of turn into a different topic discussion here a little bit. I talked to an artist a few weeks ago, and she was telling me about how she had a lot of like boots on the ground, grassroots sort of job. Like after she got out of college, she graduated, and you know how sometimes it's hard to get into like some of the artsy things that your friends are doing, as she alluded it to. And she kind of had a hard time finding her place. She was doing odd end jobs, hitting the, you know, different businesses around town, writing on chalkboards, even doing whatever, you know, to make ends meet. Do you have any stories like that out of college? Was it hard for you to find yourself? Did it take a little while? Because I mean, college is pretty stereotypical, right? Like there's a lot of stereotypical career paths to go to from art when you're getting out of college. And you kind of branched out to something like completely different from what the status quo would be, if you would call it.
For sure. And I think that that's kind of my personality, is kind of like the opposite of status quo. I'm always swimming upstream, if you will. So I think that that was kind of just like innate to who I am. But, you know, through college, you know, yes, there's so many stereotypical things. So I was really fortunate also that my thesis project, I got my first solo show for my thesis project. So I was still in school when I got my first show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was amazing and definitely gave me, I feel like, a leg up coming out of school, but also experience and more information on, is that something that I want to do? Is that something that I want to pursue? I know what that entails to put on a show. But in school, I would say Parsons was a really amazing experience. Parsons taught me how to think like an artist, to have concept and narrative and story, which is essential to be a good illustrator or artist, if you will. But, you know, they didn't really provide us with the tools for after graduation. But I realized that early on in school. And I, you know, as a very self-motivated person, I was like, okay, forget this. I'm going to do my own thing. And I did. And I would say maybe that it kind of ended up with me not being super involved with school or the people that I met there kind of separated me a bit because I was off doing my own thing. But I always feel that if you're in art school, you know, and you're planning to have a career out of art, like you have to start it before you graduate and you have to be self-motivated because nobody's going to give it to you. Nobody's going to, provide their connections. You know, I learned that connections are proprietary, if you will, almost. So I had to do that myself. So graduating, I mean, I had that show, I graduated, and then about a month later, I had another group show in the city. And then that summer, I had another solo show. So I really kind of out of the gate got like four or five shows lined up the year after I graduated. which was incredible, but then everything completely stopped and plateaued and I had nothing. And I actually, and you know, this might be the story you're looking for, but I actually went back to school for something completely different. You know, I went back to school, I wanted to get my PhD in psychology and went back for about a year, 6 months to a year. And my parents said, we think you can't, you know, you're not happy. Like you need to be making art. So go back to making art. And I'm so grateful that they noticed that and supported me in that way. And I'm so lucky and fortunate that I have a family that is willing to support me in a very unconventional path. So I went and I learned a new medium. You know, I was lucky enough that I could take the time to do that and learn something new. And because I went and learned silk screen, it opened up an entirely new world of art application. You know, I could make products. I could print shirts and sell. I could make tables, which is what I, you know, ended up doing before COVID. I was going to design furniture. I think it's so important to really like, not like go outside the box, but like crush the box, like forget what that romantic idea of what an artist is, that La Boheme, that starving artist, because that's not true. You don't have to be like that. There are so many other ways to be successful and have a business in the arts. And I think that that is something that they don't tell you in school, that art and business can go hand in hand and you can really make a living and make an imprint and a difference and also support yourself through the work that you make. So I would say that I didn't really do like drawing on chalkboards and stuff like that, but I did like do a bunch of portrait commissions and dog drawings, which are like not the things that I like to do, but you have to do what you have to do to live this life. But I do feel incredibly fortunate. I've been able to kind of find my way at a very like young age. And I know that that is not the typical. So I'm very fortunate in that way.
It's really almost different story a little bit, but the exact same journey that I've heard from a few others as far as the business piece, not really being there artistically speaking in college. And then you kind of have to find your way into that part of it. So luckily for you, though, it didn't take you as long. And the other person that I alluded to earlier, it didn't as well either, but there was a lot of character building along the way. And you just kind of referred to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the business sense, you know, I'm very lucky. My father's an incredible businessman. My brother's in business. You know, I have a family who's very, very involved in growing businesses, making businesses, et cetera. So I have people to rely on and kind of help guide me through that. Because the first time I got a contract, I didn't know what it was. You know, they didn't teach us about contracts in school. And if I didn't have the support of my family and the knowledge that my family has, I don't know how I necessarily would have figured that stuff out. So as I said, I'm really lucky to have had the guidance in business throughout my life and kind of just that I've always kind of had a fire under my ass in regards to business. That is something that I really care about. That is something that I want to achieve for myself. But I wasn't going to sacrifice what I loved to get that. So I had to figure out how to make the two work together. And I'll tell you, I never thought that it was going to be what I do now. That I did not think that working for nonprofits and human rights organizations and progressive political candidates was going to be the thing that makes me more money than I've ever made before. That was not at all what I thought was going to happen. But I think it goes to show that when you have strategy and passion and you work really hard, that you can really make anything happen for yourself.
Perfect segue into this. This is a question that I've asked everybody. I'm curious what your answer is going to be.
Sure.
And you kind of just gave a short answer, but I've interviewed all sorts of people, right? Podcasters, authors, people, you know, books about to come out, an artist. If you had to give advice to a creator that was just starting off in their journey, what would it be? Because like we all know, there's going to be ups and downs. What advice would you give them, Alex?
Yeah, I have a couple pieces. I mean, I think the first one would be, make bad art, make bad work, because you learn the most from the stuff that is not working. So I think from a creative standpoint, that is something that I did not value as a young creator. I thought everything had to be perfect. I thought every piece had to be the best piece. I would rip up pieces if I didn't like them and wouldn't save them. And in retrospect, as I look through my archive, you know, I have close to 500 works that I've done. And everything informs the other. So all the bad work that I made comes back in some way today, but improved upon and analyzed and expanded. And so I would say that, like, it's really important not to put yourself in a box or on a pedestal to make amazing stuff all the time, because that's not natural. And it's kind of like forcing yourself to be this idea of perfect that, one, doesn't exist in real life, but also, you know, like really does not exist in art. You know, it's so subjective. And what you make that you may think is a complete failure might be the piece of genius that you're missing like 2 years later. So I think that's my biggest thing in a creative sense, is just make bad work.
Makes sense. So in other words, don't be afraid to make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I believe you learn the most from your mistakes than more from your mistakes than your successes. Absolutely. And then I think also make the work that you want to make. I think that if you're making work that's intrinsically important to who you are, then that will come across in the work itself. And the gravitas of the work will be just so much heavier and more full than work that you're making for another purpose, or to fulfill a certain brief that you're prescribed. And I think that kind of goes back, you know, if someone's just starting out, and actually goes back to what we were talking about school, that when I was just starting out, and, you know, me saying that I was very self-motivated and stuff like that, I always found a way that, like, to make the project that whatever teacher gave me, make it be the work that I wanted to make, you know? And I think that that was something that gave me a leg up, was that I was never making something just because someone told me to make it. I was always making it useful for me and my artistic and mental journey, if you will. So crafting the situation around you to fit your needs, I think will be really beneficial to someone starting out.
That was a really good answer. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is another difficult one. Most people listening to this have not heard of you. I mean, and that's not a knock on you by any means, but
that's quite okay.
They really got to be there, right? To know. So I want you to tell us if you had one piece of art to pick that if you'd prefer for somebody to check out, what would that one piece be?
Oh, wow. You really weren't kidding about the hard question.
I know. That's what I do.
Yeah. Right. Just lay it on me. Okay. So, oh, wow. Okay. So I got to think, as I said, I have like over 500 pieces. So off the top of my head, I would say I made a piece called Apathy Is Not an Option. And I think I made it in April. It's very simple. It's black and white. You know, I do a lot of work in black and white and then in color and kind of mix the two. But also all of my work pretty much has some type of anecdotal commentary or text within it. And this piece is a portrait, and you can't really see his eyes. And it's interesting, this is my favorite piece because, you know, every piece I do has some like type of eye connection. It's kind of like what I'm known for. But this piece over the eyes says apathy is not an option. And kind of superimposed in the back is a crowd of faceless people. And I think that this piece really summarizes what I try and say about apathy and empathy. And that apathy kills, essentially. But empathy is what's going to bring us forward. Like, empathy is the way to go. So I think that this piece itself really kind of encapsulates what we've gone through in the past year, or year and a half at this point, through COVID and the election and Black Lives Matter and, you know, really just like this resurgence of the social justice movements, that you simply cannot not care. that's not an option anymore, because we're kind of at this critical moment where we're going to love each other or we're going to hate each other until we are no more. I think this piece kind of puts that all together in one little package that's pretty digestible. Yeah, and you can find that on my Instagram, underscore Alex Rudin, or on my website, my portfolio website, which is alexrudin.com. So that piece is it's around if you're looking for it.
Incredible. I'm going to have to check it out. And I looked at a lot of it, but I'm going to have to go back and try to identify and get that one out there. So this has been an awesome interview. I really do appreciate you just taking the time to talk to me today about this. And I think it's good advice for people listening.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Yep. No problem at all. We'll have to keep in touch. Thank you for doing this today.
Absolutely. Take care.
Really do appreciate you listening to this episode and checking it out. I hope you continue to do so with the next. I hope you have an appreciation for what I'm trying to do here. Highlight all the different things all sorts of different creators are doing. I hope you get behind me on that and continue to join me on my journey. I'm Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. See you next time.